This podcast is brought to you by the School of Security Studies at King's College London. Welcome to the War Studies podcast. My name is Sam Martin. The strong public reaction to the case of Shamima Begum and the British female recruit ISIS has highlighted the relative invisibility of women's roles in terrorism since 2001. Reflected in the arguably myopic approaches of politicians and security services during the war on terror. In this edition, we speak to a researcher who spent a decade developing an extensive picture of women in counterterrorism and terrorism. Joanna Cook is Senior Research Fellow at the International Centre for the Study of Radicalisation, based at King's College London, and her book A Woman's Place is launched this month. I started by asking Joanna why she decided to focus on this topic.
I think I've been interested in this topic for most of my life in the way that I've always had a deep interest with women's relationship to political violence. And so whether that's women as victims of political violence, women as perpetrators of political violence, or women who live in communities that are undergoing political violence, I've always just had a real interest in examining that a little bit more deeply. And for me, I guess, you know, back in 2001, I was sitting in my high school cafeteria when 9/11 happened, and this became one of the most kind of formative events of the last 18 years, and has really kind of shaped my thinking a lot about how this global war on terror has impacted women around the world as agents, partners, and targets of counterterrorism in particular. And that's really what kind of drove my interest in not only the PhD initially, but really defining that a bit more specifically within this book. The key argument I make from the outset is that over these 18 years, women have been engaged or viewed in very limited or flawed ways in relation to counterterrorism. And so I think it's important to state as well that when I'm talking about counterterrorism, I talk about full spectrum operations. And what that means is that I look at everything from the defense elements, or what we sometimes refer to as hard or direct elements of counterterrorism, so kind of the military boots on the ground, frontline efforts, all the way down to things like diplomatic initiatives in relation to counterterrorism, countering violent extremism, and community-related preventative efforts with counterterrorism, or some of the more softer and indirect efforts. So I look at women in relation to full-spectrum counterterrorism operations. And it was really clear to me over these 18 years that women were continuously viewed in flawed or limited ways. But this did evolve significantly over those 18 years, and there are a number of clear factors for this. And so what I do in the book is really start at 9/11 and look at how and why this has developed over these years.
And what's the geographical scope of the book?
So when I'm talking about U.S. counterterrorism efforts, I am talking about international efforts. And so I do exclude the domestic U.S., but I look at where that global war on terror really took the U.S. abroad. So I start looking in Afghanistan. We move into Iraq. We look at Yemen as well. And then in more recent years, specifically as ISIS has started to take the spotlight, move into places like Syria as well. So really look at some of these key areas where the global war on terror really took hold.
And what was the main research methods you used?
So within this, I was really looking at the discourses and practices of counterterrorism. So this really started with looking at how we spoke about counterterrorism, and not necessarily we, but how Presidents Bush, how Presidents Obama, and President Trump all spoke about counterterrorism. So what I did was I used discourse analysis to survey over it was over 500 primary source documents throughout the U.S. So this included things like their speeches, their national security strategies, their strategies against countering terrorism, any kind of document or statement that had a reference point or an inflection point to women in counterterrorism. So by tracing those discourses from the presidential level, I then looked at this on a second level. How did that actually start translating down onto the ground? And with that, I look at how that translated into the Department of Defense, the Department of State, and USAID. Department of Defense deals with all the defense elements of counterterrorism. Department of State would deal with the more diplomatic and kind of rights-based approaches to countering terrorism. And USAID really focused a lot on some of the countering violent extremism and some of the more developmental aspects related to the prevention of radicalization in populations. And so I traced those discourses all the way from the presidential level down to these departments and institutions themselves, and really looked at how that became visible on the ground. How did the statement by Presidents Bush or Trump trickle down into each of these departments and become visible in practice on the ground? This also meant utilizing primary source interviews. And so I had the privilege of being able to speak with the former director of the CIA and one of the top generals over in Afghanistan and Iraq, but also the first ambassador for global women's affairs out of the US, as well as many different US ambassadors that were operating as diplomats in these areas, and and many senior individuals at USAID, for example. So I had a real chance to utilize not only these extensive primary source documents, but really go have a chance to speak to some of these policymakers and practitioners that were really kind of on the front lines of this concern and trying to see and understand it from their perspective as well. The most obvious one of this would be, you know, President Bush from day one saying, you know, this is a war on terror. And by referencing it as a war, what that meant was that, you know, no longer were we responding to terrorism through criminal justice approaches alone. Terrorism was really going to be addressed through a war lens, like through a really clear defense lens. And that meant that you were going to go into a place like Afghanistan and try and approach dealing with the Taliban, who had provided these kind of safe havens for Al-Qaeda in that period. You were going to approach your counterterrorism strategy through a war lens in a way that was very unusual or unprecedented from the U.S. experience previous. Another example could be you would talk a lot about both Presidents Bush and Presidents Obama consistently referred to women's rights in relation to countering terrorism. So emphasizing things like states that had strong women's rights were much more resistant to allowing extremism to take hold in their societies. And so therefore, things like programming that would come out of places like the Department of State or USAID would then have kind of this nexus to countering terrorism. So you would see things like programs on the ground that would really try and make women more able-bodied political actors, or create more strengthened rights for women in that society, which is great. And this kind of work was very important. But what became quite interesting was how this now became kind of affiliated with or associated with countering terrorism because of this link that was increasingly being made between countering terrorism and women's rights, for example. So it was always very fascinating to see how women became spoken about in different ways and what this actually meant on the ground. And to be a little bit more specific about this, I guess, because I know this seems like it kind of goes all over the map, and 18 years to survey was, it's a handful. But to break this down, what I did was I was able to determine that there were about 7 consistent roles that women were referenced through. And so women were referenced specifically as the men and women of the armed forces. So you saw women as security practitioners consistently referenced throughout all 3 administrations. And so this allowed you to look at how women's roles as soldiers evolved over the way. You would see women referenced in terms of victimhood consistently, women as victims of terrorist actors, of terrorist acts, of sexual and gender-based violence being committed by these terrorist groups. And so you could also see how that started to become addressed in some of these initiatives within that kind of counterterrorism sphere. But you would also see things like women being referenced as terrorist actors as well. And this is one of the specific angles I thought was very important to include in this work, because how women became visible in these terrorist groups had a direct correlation with how they were responded to in counterterrorism initiatives. So I look a lot at that tension and that relationship between the roles of women in terrorist groups and in the counterterrorism responses to them. So now we've defined the roles of women. I was then able to outline about 8 factors that really kind of changed or contributed to significant changes in the way that women were engaged or thought about in relation to counterterrorism. And this was probably the most fascinating part of it, because there were discursive changes. So even in changes to the kind of language you would see being used in the US or even at the UN level, for example. So in some of the resolutions coming out referencing women, you would see different operational factors come out. So looking at things that actually happened on the ground, some of these different operational environments. But you would also see very specific ones, and I think this is what probably interested me the most, but very interesting institutional factors as well. And so you wouldn't think that this would maybe have as much of an impact, but very frankly, you know, each institution had to compete for funding. They had to then coordinate with other institutions as part of this comprehensive strategy. And each of them had their own kind of unique history and approach to dealing with women and gender in relation to security. And all of these factors kind of informed their own practices over the years as well. So I found that to be very fascinating. And the final thing that the book really tries to highlight is that there were a number of justifications that were consistently used to explain why women should be included. So whether it was that women were 50% of the population and had a kind of unique experience or kind of gendered experience in which they lived their lives, which made it pertinent to then include them, or whether it was simply like an operational benefit to include women. Actually, we increase our capacities by including women. I found that to be absolutely fascinating. And so what I really tried to do with the book was create a framework for this where you could look at the different roles that women took, the different factors that have influenced how and why that changed over the years, and the kind of justification that were often used to explain that, and created a framework that, while this was developed off the case of the US, I think is very transferable to other cases as well. So it does become something of use to reflect on for practitioners and policymakers outside of just the US.
So broadly, kind of pulling back, are we saying that women as terrorist actors have been overlooked or were overlooked in the war on terror?
So when I say women in relation to counterterrorism, I mean women as both counterterrorism actors and as terrorist actors themselves. And I think ISIS is the perfect example for showing just how limited our lens was in relation to this. And so it really wasn't until 2014 when you had thousands of women going from all over the world to go join ISIS in Iraq and Syria, including schoolgirls from, you know, from London here, or, you know, young women from Canada, for example, going over, that there was a real kind of moment that you saw practitioners and policymakers say, like, hey, why are these women going? We don't understand. What would motivate a woman to go join an organization like this? There was a real gap in knowledge about why women might be attracted to an organization like this, or why they might find a certain sense of belonging or purpose within an organization like that. And I think that really relates to how women have been overlooked in terrorist organizations more substantially for many years, specifically in relation to jihadist groups.
Okay. And does your research cover that those kind of pull factors towards women being involved in terrorist groups?
Absolutely. And I do not believe it's possible to look at counterterrorism without also looking at terrorism itself. You know, the policies you develop, the practice you develop in counterterrorism are going to be in direct response to what you believe that terrorist threat to be, how who the actors are, what their tactics and strategies and objectives are. And so as you see women start to take up diverse roles and be more active, present, and contributing to terrorist groups, you do really have to consider that and how you respond to them, and also how you integrate that into kind of preventative efforts. So, for example, if you saw women going over there because they felt like, well, actually, it was interesting because you would see Islamic State, for example, say that they would actually give women rights within their society. Their rights were being violated in France or the UK or in the West, they would say, but we can give you your rights. So they would actually utilize some of the same discourses that we would normally use for women in our society. So they would really kind of mirror those in terms of trying to recruit women into their organization. And this was something we had overlooked quite a bit initially, I think. And we started to play a bit of a catch-up game now and have a better understanding of why women might be motivated to go join an organization like this and participate. But this was something we've, again, like, had to play a very specific catch-up game on.
So groups like, say, ISIS were deliberately using a discourse of, say, empowerment to attract women?
It was absolutely fascinating because as I was going through some of these US discourses, you would see them talking about how terrorist groups were in fact violating women's rights. And so actually how the US and how, you know, even a democratic system could provide these rights for women, how this would be make them resilient to terrorist groups. At the same time, you saw terrorist groups utilizing and mirroring that exact same language. So they were saying, actually, your rights are being violated. We're the one that can provide you with them. You can practice your religion. You can have your rights within our society, in our own interpretation, in our own way. So I think really being able to mirror some of that language and to speak to women in a way that was really normal for their context in the West was one of the factors that drew so many women over there, and really is something that we have to consider in terms of how we prevent women from being attracted to these kind of groups going forward.
And so overall, what would you say the impact of failing to consider women's roles in terrorism, counter-terrorism has been?
Yeah. Boy, that's not an easy one, but it's where we've had to play the catch-up game that makes it so visible. And so whether this has been demonstrated in things like shortfalls in our capabilities or our strategic thinking or the kind of operations we've developed in responding to terrorist groups over the years. So one example is something as simple as not having enough women being trained in foreign forces, which means that you did not have women on the front lines, or you didn't have women even operating at checkpoints, and terrorist groups could absolutely exploit this. You would see groups like Al-Qaeda in Iraq around 2005-07 seeing a major gap in this kind of operational capability, and they would send women through with weapons or with other kind of contraband. And so this was there was an operational shortfall. Another example of this could be by not engaging some of the populations most impacted by terrorist actors, we didn't get a full sense of how these kind of acts and initiatives that we would have in our programs would impact different segments of the population. So for example, if you're using drone strikes to take out Al-Qaeda leaders in Yemen, for example, one of the things that looking at this angle of women, or looking at it through the angle of women, really brings to light is that in a country like Yemen, in rural populations, women have an average of 5 children. Women are not usually employed in rural areas as well, are employed in very careers that don't make significant wages. And this was something that was consistently exploited by Al-Qaeda. So Al-Qaeda would locate these families, the families of martyrs, as they would say, and they would provide funding for the kids. They would provide them with food or other necessities. And then that way, by supporting these families, would in some ways have a kind of next generation primed to join or support this organization. And this is something that, again, when you don't consider or analyze women holistically in this space, you know, not necessarily women just as terrorist actors setting off the bomb or picking up the gun, but how women are visible in and impacted by and affected by the space, that you really get a full sense of what this means and what kind of implications those kind of counterterrorism efforts have on the ground. And so one of the shortfalls then, to put it in a one-liner here, is that we haven't really understood the impacts of our counterterrorism efforts. We've been lacking in holistically developing and engaging the actors within those initiatives as well. And frankly, I think it has really left us falling short. But I think there has been a lot of cases of that learning becoming a bit more visible as well. So one of the things that I do in the book is look at different examples of new units or programs that were set up in response to countering terrorism, and some of the different related issues that came out. And so, for example, if you look at a country like Iraq, kind of 2005-2007 period, we saw the U.S. actually start training up new programs. For example, the Daughters of Iraq program. There was a shortage of women within the security forces that could not search women if they were going to, for example, election offices to go vote. And so they set up this Daughters of Iraq program where women were then trained to actually start taking up new roles in security that weren't there before. We saw similar things like an all-female elite counterterrorism unit trained up in Yemen. And there was an Afghan Special Forces unit that was composed explicitly of women. We also saw within the U.S. a number of really unique programs come out that were specifically related to women in U.S. forces. So what was initially an explicitly counterterrorism initiative in Afghanistan, for example, we saw evolve into more of a counterinsurgency. So we really saw the Taliban start pushing back, and what was initially a counterterrorism response started evolving into a more counterinsurgency response. Within the entire paradigm of counterinsurgency is engaging the population. And that meant that the U.S. then had to think a little bit more about how they would actually start engaging the whole population in Afghanistan. And that meant accessing a population that was very difficult to access, or how they saw as difficult to access, so women in Afghan society. And so what you saw was, for example, female engagement teams get set up. So even the U.S. and in their own practices developed these full female units for the sole purpose of engaging with women in Afghan society to get a better sense of what some of the concerns and what some of the needs were of women in Afghan society in this context. There were certainly concerns with this, and I highlight some of these issues with the book, but the point is that new units were coming up in different places around the world, not only in U.S. forces, but in local forces in the countries where they were active.
Is there anything specific you'd hope would happen as a result of this research?
One specific thing I would like to come out of this research is looking a little bit more at those interagency interactions. And again, if we're looking at a full spectrum approach to countering terrorism, this includes defense actors, diplomatic actors, and development actors. And I think having a lot more dialogue and understanding of how each of these different organizations approaches the issue of women in relation to countering terrorism or countering violent extremism, it can really inform the other partners within that. It can help us kind of better understand things like gender dynamics, appropriate strategies, and really pull together a much more cohesive and effective strategy. This book covers 18 years, all the way up until January 2019, looking at some of the developments under the Trump administration. And so for me and my generation, Al-Qaeda and the events of 9/11 were the real kind of game-changing factors that have shaped global affairs for the last 18 years. For students that are starting to come into my classroom now, they're, you know, some of them don't remember 9/11 because they weren't yet born. That, not to age myself too much here or anything. But what that means is that the way that they perceive terrorism and global security is much different than even my generation. The way that ISIS has been able to utilize things like social media, you see the rise of kind of populism and far-right extremists from places like New Zealand to the US to Germany taking hold as well. And so one thing I, again, kind of hope that this book can do is inform and demonstrate how these concerns of the past, to really kind of highlight those concerns of the past and where we've fallen short, and help this next generation really think about how that can be applied to the issues that they're facing today. We're still going to be dealing with ISIS and Al-Qaeda for years to come, but we've got new threats and new concerns coming up as well. So we really have to be much more cognizant about how women are engaged as agents, partners, and targets of these efforts going forward.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the War Studies podcast. For more information about the School of Security Studies, visit kcl.ac.uk/securitystudies.